What is it like running a card show, and how could you ever get started doing a card show perhaps in your own community? Well, today I am bringing in a true expert on this subject. Dan Bliss is the owner of the Front Row Card Shows. These are very popular, very big card shows all over the West Coast of the United States. But they've gotten very big and very popular pretty quickly because he only started doing his first Front Row Card Show about 3 years ago, and now there are more than 20 of them, which are going to be happening next year. So he's a real expert on the subject of card shows and running good ones. And today we're going to learn about his history, how he got into this to begin with, and learn about his tips for making a card show successful. It's going to be a great conversation, so sit back and enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Arena Club. Arena Club is an innovative platform featuring grading and authentication, vaulting, and digital pack openings. Be sure to check out the amazing items up for auction right now at Arena Club. From rare cards to top-tier collectibles, there's something for you at Arena Club. Download the Arena Club app today by searching Arena Club in the App Store on your phone, and then use promo code SCI for 10% off your first purchase of cards at Arena Club. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you here. I really want to dig in today to learn more about what it is like to operate a card show. Because not only do you operate one card show, you operate a bunch of card shows that travel around the West Coast. And these are some of the best card shows. I always hear great things about these card shows, and that you draw people from all up and down, you know, the West Coast, and people from everywhere. Our crew from Cards HQ here in Atlanta travels out to your card shows all the time. So let's start, before we get into like the specifics of like actually running a card show and that and how you do that, let's start. Where did you start with all this? Like, how did you ever get into all of this to begin with?
Well, I started collecting as a teenager, like a lot of collectors, and I began selling cards at a flea market, and that's where it started, you know, buying and selling cards. I would take my cards. This was outdoors, and I didn't have a table. So I found two sawhorses in our garage and a broken door.
Okay.
And that became my table to sell cards.
What city was this?
This is in the Cleveland area.
In Cleveland. Okay. Yeah, so that's where you grew up.
Yes. And so it started like that, just innocently. It was $7 to rent a space. And I was 16, and I'd back my car in and pull out the door and the sawhorses and set them up. And I made display cases with plexiglass and wood, and they were really bad, but that's how it started. And I just have always had a love of the cards back then. This is in the 80s.
Now, did you do cards professionally through this journey, or was this more of I collected as a kid and I went on and did other things in my professional life, and now I'm organizing card shows?
Well, it started, I moved from doing the flea market to going to shows, because logic was, instead of a fraction of the people being interested in cards, everybody's a card collector at a card show, so I'll pay more to be a vendor there, and I'd pay $35 to be a vendor at a show. And when I got to college, my sophomore year of college, a buddy and I were just, you know, hanging out in the dorms, and he and I were both collectors, and we decided to organize a show.
Okay.
So I started organizing shows in 1989.
Okay, so you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
You've got some real experience when it comes to organizing card shows.
Yeah, so buying and selling cards and then organizing card shows, the combination, I paid my way through college. And when I graduated, I wanted to join the real world, so I stopped running shows and sold almost all of my collection except for some Clemente stuff that I loved. And that's where it started. So while I was in college, I organized 43 card shows in both Cleveland and Columbus. I also did one in Pittsburgh. And then I also organized three large auctions, live auctions. I hired an auctioneer and got hundreds of consignments. And so I was deep into the hobby throughout college.
Cool.
And then got out of the hobby in 92.
When did you get back into it again?
About 12 years ago. I just missed it, and I just started getting back into the hobby and buying and selling cards on eBay and then collecting for myself. And then at some point I went and was a vendor at a show and got back into it that way.
And when did you say, I want to start organizing card shows again?
Well, it happened in a very organic way. I couldn't find a show that was a regular show that I was happy with in Vegas. And so I live in Vegas now. And so I decided, well, who would be better at organizing a show than me? And in the meantime, you know, after, you know, I told you I collected as when I was young and I was doing shows, I got into the concert industry. So in the meantime, I learned the concert business. I promoted 2,100 concerts and a dozen music festivals. So I really learned a lot about organizing events in a very big way, promoting, marketing, bringing big crowds, because that's really core to the concert business. If you don't bring crowd, you know, that's not, you don't have a show. And so I learned a lot about that through those years. And then so when I come back into the hobby as an organizer, I've got those years of experience promoting concerts. I also organize some entrepreneur conferences. So that event experience, now coming back into the hobby, I'm coming back with a whole new set of tools that I didn't have when I was a college student.
It's super, I imagine that's super helpful. And what great background to apply to organizing a card show. And I imagine that's a lot of the reason why your card shows have become so talked about and so successful. You know, people recognize your shows as big, important shows, you know, to go to. I hear a lot of buzz about them on the East Coast, even though all your shows are on the West Coast. So I imagine a lot of that has played out. It's interesting. We actually have somewhat of a similar story in that, you know, like you, I did cards as a kid. Now, I didn't do it to the extent you did. I wasn't organizing my own card shows or anything like that. But then I lost touch with it for many years. But then I got back into it and really started, just like how you kind of organized your first card show because you felt like Vegas was lacking a good card show, so why not do it? I started doing YouTube videos because I felt like there weren't really any good YouTube videos about sports cards, particularly from a dollars and cents standpoint. So I'm going to do it myself, you know? And it played into some of my background. You know, I went to school for journalism, for television journalism, and then ran a digital marketing agency for many years. So I kind of had some of the marketing aspects and kind of rolled
that
forward.
So when you came back into the hobby, you're looking at it through a different lens than you did when you were younger.
That helped me a lot. Right. And I just like I imagine.
You have a whole new set of tools in your tool bag, and that's really what it's about. And I feel exactly that I have, you know, a distinct competitive advantage over any other organizer. And, you know, not to brag that I'm better at anything, I just have a certain amount of experience legitimately. I've logged the 10,000 hours in promoting, marketing, and bringing big crowds in the concert world. And now I'm applying my experience and tactics to the card industry. So I'm just applying it to the new industry.
And there's nothing that can beat that type of experience. Adjacent experience that you were able to see the patterns and recognize the patterns and apply over, there's nothing that can beat that. And it's obviously furthered you along quickly. When was that first card show that you organized in Las Vegas?
February 2022.
Okay. So we are just about 3 years since that first card show that you organized. And just so the audience understands, what is the scope of what you do today? Like in 2025, how many card shows and how many locations?
We're in 6 markets in 2025, and we'll have 7,000 vendor tables at our shows combined between those cities.
And the cities, I know you're Vegas, you're Phoenix, Seattle, Pasadena, California. Those are the ones that I'm aware of.
Right. And Portland and San Diego.
Okay. Those are, so all up into all the major cities, or a lot of the major cities on the West Coast area for sure. So you did the first show in Vegas in February 22. How did that show go? Like, did you come out of that show saying, man, that was so successful, I just can't wait to do shows 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 and go to 20 cities? Or did you come out of that going, that was a little rough, I don't know if I want to keep doing this?
Well, I was both surprised and not surprised at how successful it was. It was a very modest show. My intention was never to turn this into a business mm-hmm. or to truly grow it. It came from a real genuine place. I wanted to have a regular show, and I thought, I can organize. I had a talk with my wife, and we just chatted about it. I said, you know, I think I'm just going to organize my own show. And, you know, we'll do it four times a year. It's just going to be a small show in Vegas. We'll bring a big crowd. It'll be a lot of fun. And our first show, we just had massive crowd. It was just wall to wall. The second show we did ended up being even bigger. And already we knew that we needed to move to another venue. And so then we moved to a bigger venue, and it's just been growing since. And our first show was only 65 tables. Mm. And now the show we have coming up in Vegas is 500 tables.
Wow. That's a big show. 500 tables is a very large show. Yeah. That's for, you know, to put that in perspective, that's what I would consider to be like a large regional show, would be like a 500 table show. That's a good size. I don't know exactly how many shows, I don't know exactly how many tables like Dallas or Chantilly or Philly have, but you got to be kind of up there with those types of shows. Like, it, you know, it's a good size show floor, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And we have really good brands we work with. SGC has signed on. They're doing all of our shows. Beckett does about half of our shows. JSA does a lot of our shows. You know, Arena Club just signed on. I know you work with them. They signed on as a sponsor for the year. Cardboard Gold is a partner, as well as Pristine Auction. We work with some really good brands, and they're getting on board because they see the direction we're going, and they've seen our growth.
That's exciting. So you're doing, how often, you're in six different cities next year. How often are you doing a show in each of these cities?
We'll have 21 shows in 2025, so almost two a month.
Wow. That is a full-time calendar. Now, this is your full-time focus now, I would have to assume?
No, I invest in commercial real estate as well. So this started as a sideline.
Right.
And it's becoming more and more all-consuming lately.
Well, just like what I got going on here. I mean, you know, Sports Card Investor started as a sideline, started as a hobby, started not as a big business plan to grow it and all of this. But it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Isn't it great when that happens organically? Because it shows that you're serving a need, that you're filling a need, that you're providing a service to people when things take off like that, you know? Because sometimes when you start a business and you're pushing and pushing and pushing, and it's always an uphill battle. And not to say that it's not a lot of work. I know you work hard. I know I work hard. So it's a tremendous amount of work. But it's really fulfilling to see the reception to something you're doing, and to the market, and seeing how people react to it. And frankly, as a collector, this is a hobby.
Yes.
I mean, we work in an industry that is a hobby for most people. And it's such a joy to work in that side of the, as opposed to a lot of people who just dread going to work every day.
Yeah.
I'm excited to get up every day, and it's very motivating and fun to know that, you know, I'm doing something that, you know, brings joy to a lot of people, and, you know, it helps a good number of small business people make a living. And I just, you know, I'm grateful to be in this field.
I think when you start something organically because you are passionate about it and you love it, it makes it easier to overcome the setbacks. And with any entrepreneurial venture, there are always setbacks. I tell my team all the time, I've said it on the show before, that if business is going well, if what you're doing is going well, it's two steps forward and one step back. It is almost never three steps forward and no steps back. There's always setbacks that occur, no matter how well things are going. And how painful and discouraging those setbacks are is often directly related to how much you're enjoying doing what you're doing. So if it started from an organic place, because it started from love and passion and wanting to do it, then those setbacks don't bother you as much, and you're more focused on the path ahead. But if you're not in love with what you're doing, then the setbacks sting a lot more, and they're a lot more discouraging, and it's harder to keep pushing forward in when those setbacks occur.
You know, Steve Jobs talks about that. He says, you know, that you better love what you do if you're going to be something being an entrepreneur in some arena, because, you know, otherwise you would quit, you know, when you hit the hardships, when you hit the obstacles, and it's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you hit them. Even if things are going unbelievably well, you still run into bumps all the time.
Well, sometimes when things are going so well, you're overwhelmed with work because you're doing too well.
Yeah.
You end up with different challenges.
You do.
Like, you end up with challenges here where you're running out of inventory. Mm-hmm. You now got to figure out. That's another problem to solve.
We're running out of inventory. We're running out of storage space as well. Not as much like with the inventory I'd like to have, like cards, which we don't have enough of. But like, you know, we have to have now storage space, for example, for our supplies, because we're doing so many breaks, so many live selling of singles, that we've got to have a massive inventory of top loaders and penny sleeves and shipping supplies. You know, we sell on our website, you know, tons of orders every single day. So
right.
Boxes and bubble mailers and all that stuff. Our warehouse is not big enough to support all of that.
These are good problems.
They are.
A bad problem would be no customers.
Correct.
So
correct.
But problems nonetheless, things you have to solve.
Still things.
Well, we've got problems like our venue's overcrowded. Mm-hmm. And we have a fire marshal that says we won't let people into the show. So now we have to start a line for people who, you know, are waiting outside. Or, for example, in Seattle, we were so busy that the venue said, hey, we got to hold the crowd because the fire marshal shut this down. So then we have to let two out, one in, two out, one in. In Pasadena recently, the fire marshal was physically there walking around the room. He said, okay, we got to hold the line. So we then were only letting people in very slowly, very like, okay, let 20 in. And they were doing that with people who had tickets. Well, the problem is there was a stretch of time for hours we were letting zero people in who didn't have tickets. So we had over 1,000 people outside because they didn't have tickets. Now, some of them were mad, and it's like, you don't have a ticket. So, you know, we tried to pacify them and calm them down, and a number of people, we gave free tickets to come back Sunday just as a courtesy, but still problems. But these are really good problems. You know, we have such a big crowd that we've got to figure out ways to manage the people.
I think the first time I ever was exposed to your card show, the Front Row Card Show, was when I saw a social video of the line at one of your Vegas shows, where it was wrapping. Just, it seemed like it was a mile long line.
Wait, I want to add a caveat to that, okay? Just because I don't want people to be afraid to come to our show because they see such a big line. So just to be clear, when we take a video of the line, it's always right before the doors open.
Right.
So it's at peak length, and it just demonstrates we've got a serious crowd here. But one of the things we do, we care very deeply about customer service. We actually wristband that line. Our ticket team goes and wristbands all those people in line, and we get almost to the very end of the line, and then they have to come back to the front, okay, right before the doors open, because we give out swag bags to the first 200 people each day. And then the crowd floods in. Like, you know, they just pour in, and a vast majority of the line is in within 2 minutes, because we care about the customer service, and we don't want those people. We don't want, okay, doors open at 10. Okay, customer one, show me your ticket. That's not cool. They were there. So we bring the line to them. We have a cart. We walk down the line with a couple of iPads scanning their tickets. Mm. Ping, 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 and wristbanding them, so then they can all just pour in all at once. So we get this huge flood of people right in the door when the show's open. So anybody who sees our long lines, just understand that you'll still get in super fast.
So I wanna talk for people out there who are listening who might be curious or interested in starting a card show in their own local market. Maybe they feel their market's underserved. Maybe they've had interest in the past about starting a card show. What's that process like? Like, what does it take? I imagine so much of the work is in the lead up, trying to get the dealers committed, marketing the show to get customers there. It feels like it would be difficult trying to get something brand new off the ground to be able to do both of those things. How did you go about it the first time you did the show in Vegas?
Well, it is hardest to get started because no one knows you, and nobody knows and trusts you yet. You haven't built trust. And you know, I guess for me, it was just a lot of persistence and, you know, talking to a lot of people and really demonstrating my commitment to bringing the crowd. One of the things that we do differently is we have very much of a long-term approach. I'm not thinking maximize the profitability of each show. And I know there's promoters that are. I love other promoters. I'm a vendor. I go to other shows as a vendor. So I don't disparage other promoters ever. Sometimes people disparage another promoter to me, and I say I have no comment. I'm not going to say anything about other promoters. And there's a lot of good promoters out there, and there's a lot of promoters that aren't that great. And our approach is a long-term time horizon. And in fact, in every city we've expanded to, we lose money on our first show at least.
Okay.
Because we are not profit-centric. You know, I've made money in real estate. I don't come to this from a place of how many dollars can I squeeze out of the situation. We've always kept our vendor tables reasonable. We charge admission, but it's very modest. We oftentimes give free tickets to local card shops to support the shops. And it's just a goodwill gesture that we do. It's a marketing thing, but it's also a goodwill gesture to demonstrate our commitment to supporting the local shops and helping them out as best we can. So really for us, all I can say is that, you know, we have demonstrated our commitment to promoting, bringing a big crowd, working, spending a lot on advertising, having prizes. We do some amazing things for kids. When kids come to our show, 10 and under, first of all, they get in free. But one of the things I think we do is really fun is we do a hobby hunt. So it's a scavenger hunt where the kids walk around and collect stickers from the vendors. Any vendor wants to participate. If you don't want kids coming to your table all the time, you don't ask them for a sticker, then you don't have to. But a lot of vendors participate. Kids come to the table, get stickers. They go to the front, get a free prize. We give away 500 to 600 of those every show to kids. And it's just a goodwill gesture that we do. Now, those kids now have a great experience. And they're now going to hopefully be the customers of the future. And that's one of the things we do to grow the hobby. So it's our commitment because we're not short-term centric. And we're looking long-term. So we're always looking to give. We're always between prizes. We now give away $1,000 in cash shopping sprees every Sunday. And that makes our Sundays better. The other thing we do, other promoters don't, is we don't let our vendors leave early on Sunday. Everybody's been to shows on Sundays that are terrible. And half the vendors, you know, leave by 2 p.m.
Yeah, they do. If show they, show it, hours they don't will be till 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. and right. 2, 3, you know, 2:30, everyone's
down.
Packing up. Yeah, I see that
right.
all the time
we don't
at
do
shows.
That. We don't allow it. Now, you know, we actually have leverage now because our shows are, we bring big crowds, vendors make money. So with our successful shows, we gain a little leverage so we can enforce that. Our last Pasadena show, we had 300 tables. We had a 375 table waiting list. So it gives us a little bit of leverage to enforce rules. And some vendors get upset with it. But understand, it's not for you. It's for the collectors. That's to make it a better show for them. This isn't about you. Sometimes they'll say, oh, it's just an hour early. And we say, that's right, it's just an hour. Stay to the end. You know, they want to leave an hour early. No, don't. It's just, you just said it, just an hour. Yeah, stay to the end. It makes it a better show. And now as a result, we've trained our collectors, our attendees. They now know they can come to a front row card show and it'll be busy till 5 p.m. on Sunday.
Yeah, that's nice. That is a weakness.
We have to throw people out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. It's time to go.
Mm-hmm.
On a Sunday,
yeah.
We're throwing customers out.
That's nice.
And it's, you know, come back next time. And then, you know, trade nights. You know, that costs money
mm-hmm.
to run trade nights, and we run it's free, but it's just about goodwill. It's about goodwill. We give away so much, and it's just about growing the hobby. We're really, really committed to that, and that pays us off long term.
So if you were to start, let's say you were to go to a new city next year, like obviously next year you are going to a couple of new cities,
yeah.
right? We've already talked about you're going to San Diego, I think you said.
Correct.
Next year was one of the new cities you're getting
Correct.
Into, right? Portland, I think you mentioned as well,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So when you are going to go to like a Portland, if you haven't done a show there before, you don't necessarily know maybe a lot of dealers in that local area. Are you?
Well, let me give you this example. So we when we moved to when we started a show in Seattle.
Okay.
That geographically is very far from the southwestern states we were already doing shows in.
Right.
We were already in Vegas, established in Vegas, established in Pasadena, established in Phoenix. So it was a big leap to go up to Seattle, right?
It sounds because, that way, yeah.
Because, you know, those other cities are drivable. So
correct.
Vendors are willing to drive. So it was difficult to go up to Seattle.
So you got
to
find all new dealers or a lot of new dealers.
A lot of new dealers. And fortunately, there was good word of mouth for us already. And this is crazy, but we had at least 25 vendors that drove or flew up because they're that committed to our shows from Vegas or LA or whatever. And so that gave us a good start. It gave us a good foundation. But after that, we didn't know. We didn't know. And in fact, our first show in Seattle was only 150 tables, which is small for us. All of our shows are a lot bigger than that now. But we didn't know if we'd be able to sell. And in fact, we barely sold it. Now, we've sold out every show we've ever had, fortunately, because we don't bite off more than we can chew. But we sold 150 tables just barely at the last minute, sold out the show, and we then packed it. We had such a massive crowd. The line was insane. Our pre-sale tickets were so strong in advance, we knew that we couldn't even do our second show in that same venue. So we already found another venue. And even before the show, like 2 weeks before the show, I'm like, we can't do our second show there because we had another show planned 3 months later. And so we had to move to the Tacoma Convention Center for our second show up there. And again, we packed that. So we brought a massive crowd to that. So now it's easy in Seattle for us to sell tickets because we've really established ourselves. Now, what my point being is that expanding into Portland, that's a two-hour drive.
See,
well,
yeah.
It'll be new for us for attendees, for collectors. But a lot of vendors will travel.
Yeah.
So we have a show planned in March 2025, and we sold it out 200 tables 3 months in advance. I was floored by that because in my mind, it's a new market. It's an unproven market. I don't know how we're going to do there. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to bust my butt to make sure we have a big crowd. But I was floored that we sold out that far in advance for a first-time show. But that's really about trust. That's about reputation, and it's about vendors who believe in us now.
When you needed to fill those additional 125 tables in Seattle, beyond the 25 that you kind of filled with people willing to travel up, were you calling local card shops to tell them about the show? Were you advertising it like amongst dealer Facebook groups, or like how were you kind of building up the groundswell amongst dealers?
Well, it's a combination of things. I don't like to solicit, let's say. I don't like to get pushy and beg people to do the show. I don't do that. It doesn't come from a real place, and it's not fun. I just have no interest in that. So it started with, we will reach out to vendors and some shop owners, but only a select few, the ones that are prominent, well respected, and we come from an authentic place. And we say, look, we know that you are a leader in this community, and we want to have the best at our shows. And we come with SGC will be at the show. We tell them a few other key vendors that'll be at the show. We'll talk about what we're doing in other markets, some of our sponsors perhaps. And so I start there because then we have because now, again, we already have a big head start on things, having an SGC doing all of our shows and some of our sponsors now, that we have a feather in our cap. So, and then reputation. So it is easier for us now than it would be. But honestly, I started at 65 tables.
Right.
So
If
I were starting from scratch from nowhere again, I wouldn't start with anywhere near 100 tables.
Right.
It just because here's what happens. Let's say you do a 100 table show and you maybe just bug the heck out of every vendor you can find and you able to sell 100 tables. You better bring a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You better bring a crowd that not only is a crowd, but spends money.
Yep.
Because vendors need to make enough money to pay for their table costs, to pay, maybe if they traveled, to pay for their hotel and airfare and things like that. So you have to bring legit customers, or you're done, or you're already out of the industry.
Right. So start small, do what you can, do what you know you can do
build
at first, and build a reputation. What's the secret to getting those customers to a card show? Like when you go to Portland, for example, this year, and the dealers know about you now, but the customers in Portland don't. None of the local collectors in Portland know who the Front Row Card Show is. How are you going to get them to the Front Row Card Show?
You know, it's funny. Every market's different. It really comes to like a fundamental belief in and drive, really, of bringing a crowd and working at it. You know, there are promoters that are out there that think their job is table seller. They think their job is to sell tables. Your job isn't to sell tables. Your job is to promote. You're called a promoter. And so I take that to heart. I'm a promoter. My job is to bring a crowd. The tables should sell themselves. And that's my fundamental attitude about every market. And every city is different. I use different combinations of media. Certainly I use online tactics. I use a lot of grassroots tactics. It's really a full-fledged market. You own a marketing company. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a full-fledged marketing strategy for every market. And I have to adapt based on the media options I have available to me and, you know, what the market has for me and how many people we need to bring. What's my budget? Am I willing to go over my budget? I now have advantage of knowing the tracking on my ticket sales for all my other shows. So I'll know a month out how we tracking, how's it going, so I can adjust. So if I feel like, you know, we're ahead of pace, you know, I can say, okay, let's just keep doing what we're doing. If I feel like we're behind the pace, I'll like, all right, let's spend more money. Let's find some other marketing tech. Let's do something else. So it's really about, you know, truly being an entrepreneur and adapting and adjusting and tweaking. And again, it then comes back to my experience, you know, having done so many different concerts where I'm tracking with Ticketmaster ticket sales and, you know, having to adapt on the fly. And then it's a lot of instinct. So, you know, I'm sorry that's not a straight answer, but it really comes to taking it truly to heart about what you're doing. It goes back to like a Tom Brady thing where he talks about it's not easy, but it's simple.
I like it. Any plans to bring your card shows east?
Well, we've talked about it. I mean, the way we're doing it now in the Pacific Northwest is we consider Seattle our hub, and then we can have all of our supplies and signage and display cases and all the things we need to run shows in the Pacific Northwest. And you know, we're exploring other markets further east, and that would involve committing to a hub, mm-hmm. and then having that be a truckable different distance from other markets.
Sure.
We're exploring it. I think we'll continue to learn as we grow, because we're always learning and we're always improving. And we also want to serve a need. We don't want to go to a market that's being served. You know, if there's already good shows in a particular market. You know, we looked at the Bay Area, San Francisco, and love San Francisco. There's money there. There's a lot of collectors there, a lot of sports fans there. But we felt that there's already some shows there. I feel like if we went there, we could do really well. But who am I serving? Myself? That's not really the right mindset, I think. So if collectors already have some shows to go to, even if I think mine could be better, if collectors already have shows to go to and vendors already have shows to go to, then I feel like that might not be the market for me, at least not yet. Maybe at some point down the road. But right now, I'm happy to focus on markets where collectors don't have a big regional show to go to that's 200 to 500 tables. If they don't have a big show with grading companies, maybe autograph authenticators, big vendors, big brands like Cards HQ coming out to the show, if they don't have that in that market, well, then that might be a place I can go, because now collectors love a big show to go to, and vendors love a show where they know that I'm going to bring a big crowd. So I'm serving both of those groups. So that's what we try to do.
Well, I look forward to see where you're going to go next. Should be a lot of fun to watch. Dan, this has been fun. We're going to do a second episode about tips for setting up at a card show as a dealer. But we're going to make the audience wait for that one. That episode's going to come out on the channel here in next week or two. But we're going to wrap this one for now. Great conversation. Appreciate you coming
on.
Thank
you for having me.
And looking forward to continuing the conversation here from the dealer standpoint. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Love it.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan. And thank you all, everyone out there, for watching. And just a reminder, the full-length episode of these Jeff Wilson shows are available on YouTube, on the Jeff Wilson Show channel on YouTube. They're also available on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you watching. We'll see you soon with our next one. Take care.